Welcome back to Left of Normal, where everything that isn't right is left, and everything that is left is right. I'm your host, Scott Seary. Before we get started, I want to start this thing off. I guess we've already started, so I can't start this thing off because I already started things off. Anyway, I want to let you know that I appreciate you. I love that you're here. Your support means everything to me. Please help me share this podcast. Help me grow the network. Just hit the like button. Comment on the Facebook posts if you see those over there. If not, search for them because the Facebook algorithms can be finicky sometimes and they just don't show things anymore. And maybe even send this episode to someone you think might find it enjoyable. We're going to be talking a bit about introverts and extroverts and solitude and isolation, being alone, loneliness, all the above. So if you have an extrovert that really struggles with getting away from people, send it to them. Maybe they'll gain a few tips from it. Or they'll just get mad. Who knows? Last week we talked about anger, rage on the spectrum, and how sometimes these fits of rage aren't actually anger-driven, but they're meltdown-driven. That happens as the brain gets overwhelmed and can't figure out how to respond to the overstimulation. Finish up this episode, scroll on back, listen to that one. It is especially useful if you have a child who seems to rage quite often. This week, we're turning our focus to being alone. Solitude, loneliness, isolation, all of the above, they sound similar, but they do have a little bit different meanings. One of my earlier episodes talks about the fine line between loneliness and being alone. So after you finish up this episode and then listen to the rage episode, then scroll all the way back to episode 18 if you're keen on checking that one out. For now, we're looking more at isolation and solitude. What causes it in the Left of Normal community, and just kind of how we take it all in, how the Left of Normal brain takes it all in and views not being around people. So on Monday, if you follow the Facebook page or my LinkedIn or Twitter pages, I don't think anybody actually follows my Twitter pages because my analytics show that it's displayed to like two people, anything I post. So I don't think anyone's on Twitter anymore. It's because it's called X. Anyway, I linked to an article titled The Joys of Autistic Solitude. It's something that I know many of my extroverted friends would never be able to understand. I even joked about it on Wednesday as I watched everyone go a little crazy when the world shut down in 2020. I didn't watch that on Wednesday, but, you know, 4 years ago, I was just sitting there like, this is nice. And me and my introvert friends are just like, this is great. Nobody talks to me. I don't have to, like, do social things. But it's not really just introverts. They usually don't mind heading out into society and socializing. The difference is that when that socializing stuff is done, the introvert has to take time to recharge. It's draining. It's a lot of work. Extroverts are the opposite. They can be alone, but that is draining and takes extra work. So when they're done with their solitude and alone time, they have to go be around people in order to recharge. Left of Normals, however, run into different issues. And these issues can tend to wear on them and turn them into the isolated weirdo. So sensory overload, something that can lead to fits of rage, it's a real thing. And most people will get overwhelmed at times, whether they're left, normies, or right. The overload I see most often amongst any group of people is when noise levels get to be just a bit too much, which they often do in my house. As an ADHD child who finds great joy in auditory stimming, more or less just kind of goes nuts. Banging things, tapping on things, squeaking things, then you throw in a couple dogs who think, hey, now is the perfect time to play bite face, and a cat who's old and senile and he just wants to eat something. Or maybe he wants to sleep, or get pet, or get let outside, or Maybe he's just thirsty and he forgot where the water is. Anyway, he's over in the corner meowing obnoxiously. And all these auditory stimuli are just building up and up and up. And normally, I've learned to tune out this noise. I don't know when or how, but I've kind of developed an ability to just ward off most sounds when there's lots of sounds coming in. It seems like I just kind of turn the ears off, like I just don't even hear it. Until I realize what I've done, and then all of a sudden every sound comes flooding in all at once. Now, if I'm in a better state of mind, I can isolate and eliminate the overload, eliminate the source, rather than just trying to tune it out. But sometimes, you know, I'm all comfy in my recliner chair, and that turns into a meltdown of rage directed at which animal, child, or Alexa device happens to be the closest to me. Other overloads, other overstimulations have to do with textures. Isolating to a safe place with acceptable textures may be necessary. Could be have to do with temperatures, perhaps smells, or basically any overloaded of our five senses. Some people have six of them. For the normies out there, sensory overloads, I don't know because I am not one of them, but they are quite temporary, where they can quickly redirect and everything's fine. For the left of normal crowd, it's generally not that easy. The solitude provided by a safe place helps to regulate and put the misfiring brain back onto a good path that allows us to put our mask back on and once again function in a society that demands our conformity. Regulating ourselves doesn't always come easy. It's not always just isolate for a few minutes, boom, we're redirected, on with our lives. And those who are younger, or if you have younger left of normal children, you know that it's not easy to recognize this. So as we age, we obviously understand our brains and bodies a little bit better, and we can recognize when things are getting out of control. Up until, I don't even know what age, but obviously through the early teen years at least, it's just much harder. And these individuals, these younger left of normals, they need the guidance of an adult to show them that being sent to their room isn't a punishment. It's an opportunity to recharge and to recover, because we can sense the overstimulation in them, even though they cannot. So when I was a kid, when I was a young child, maybe somewhere around 8 to 10 years old, I was big into collecting baseball cards. Most likely it was because my older brother collected baseball cards and I had no idea how to function, you know, without just mimicking everything that he did. He's about a year and a half older than I am. And so I just tagged along and, you know, he liked baseball cards, so obviously I liked baseball cards. We had a kind of a basement room that was tucked behind another room. It didn't have any windows, just one door, but not even actually door, one entryway. It was just a playroom because it's not safe to have a bedroom without windows. Back there we had toys and everything and all our baseball cards kind of semi-organized into some little those plastic drawer type things that hold, you know, they're super cheap and help you be at least a little bit organized. Anyway, we would spend hours down there. Often I would spend hours by myself sorting the baseball cards that we would often get in big boxes from garage sales, or relatives that did garage sailing would send them to us, and they'd all be jumbled up. And so we'd go through, and I'd go through, and I would sort them by manufacturer and date. So all the 1996 Topps cards would go in one pile, 1995 Don Russ would go into another pile, and so on and so forth. Then I would grab that pile that I had the specific date and manufacturer, and then I'd go through and one card at a time, look up the value in whatever the latest Beckett that I had. Beckett, I think it was, there was a full name, we just called it the Beckett. It was a magazine style guide that listed pretty much every baseball card known to man and their values. Sort of. If the card wasn't listed, then it had just an unlisted price of, say, like 3 to 5 cents or something like that. So we'd look for these ones, you know, if you got the good ones, the Upper Deck brand. Sometimes they'd have cards worth like 10 bucks, and we'd buy packs of Upper Deck and hope that we got that really rare card. And generally you don't, but maybe there was something now. They're tucked away in a box somewhere. So I didn't intentionally set out to recharge and recover by sorting baseball cards. It just kind of happened because it was a retreat for me to isolate into a safe place and redirect my focus so I didn't act out quite as much. So as I got older, the baseball card thing wasn't a thing as much. I kind of grew out of that sometime in middle school. And instead, I would go outside. When I distinctly remember that one of my friends, around 7th-ish grade, he switched schools. I don't remember if it was in the middle of the school year or just, you know, didn't come back in 8th grade. And so we kind of played together. We hung out together a lot. And now I was without, like, the one person that I'd play with. And so I'd just take walks alone, often just wander around the outside of the house. Sometimes I'd go up to the rim rocks that were just up the street at the time. Occasionally, I'd hop on my bicycle and just pedal around the neighborhood. Part of this solitude and isolation comes from the left of normal desire to seek out a safe place, one that's away from other people's judgments and prying eyes. So even though friends and family are considered to be safe, this isn't exactly the same. It's a bit different. When I'm alone, there's no worry about if I want to make noises or stim in some weird way. Maybe I want to strip down naked and wander through the house making wild monkey noises. And that's just what I do. So, you know, if you're listening to this, please don't show up unannounced. That would just be awkward for everyone. When we're isolated and in solitude, we do whatever we need to in order to refocus, recharge, and recover. Maybe it's walking around like a monkey. Maybe it's shrieking. Maybe it's listening to music that everyone else in the household hates. And or maybe it's the rocking or the flapping hands or snapping or tapping or whatever stimming activity takes the brain off of the unknown and puts it into a physical action that it can control. Those who are on the spectrum tend to isolate and engage in solitude behaviors much more than normies, or those who are right of normal, generally because of the social difficulties. There have been times where I was in a social situation that I thought was going well. I thought everything was really good, and then later I found out that I was actually being made fun of and acting like a fool. It was usually after it was done, generally some sort of church or maybe youth group activity, and we'd be on our way home, and my older brother would tell me how embarrassing I was. I had no idea that I was being embarrassing, and I really had no idea what I did, and so you get a few of those under your belt, and you just don't want to be around people anymore. Apparently, you don't understand what to do, you don't know how to do it, you try to mimic other people's behaviors, but that's just so-called embarrassing. So after school, you don't hang out with the group of people out front, and instead you wander the halls alone and see if you can jimmy into the janitor closet to see what's in there. Sometimes there's fun stuff. Normally it's just cleaning supplies. All that to say, when you come across the idea that the left of normal people don't like to be around others or prefer to be alone, it's because it's a lot of work trying to understand how to act and interact with others. Throw in multiple social groups where each one requires a different method of acting, and now you got to keep all those straight, and you got to put on the right mask for the right situation, and sometimes it's just easier to not do anything and curl up into a little ball in your basement and just wait for the day to be done. But it's also to say that everyone should practice intentional solitude. And that's especially true for those who find solitude uncomfortable. If that's you, then I highly recommend figuring out how to be comfortable in an otherwise uncomfortable situation, because at some point in your life, you're going to be there, and practicing now is going to make it go a whole lot better. That discipline is a way that we can make sure we are always able to regulate ourselves. Practicing intentional solitude helps you develop the discipline necessary to work through situations that you otherwise would not put yourself in. It also allows for introspection. When we're constantly bombarded by outside stimulus, and that's not even social situations, which 90% of it now comes through our phones, and when we finally put those things down, we're in front of a computer that bombards us with information and dings and chirps and stimulus and news and clickbait, and watch these Instagram reels that literally never end. And we forget how to look inward because we're provided stimulus from outside the body, and we don't know how to bring it from inside. A significant amount of personal growth comes from within, and unless you take the time to allow that stimulus from within, the growth doesn't happen. For those who live in Montana especially, we can get out into nature. I believe Americans suffer from ODD. It's a outdoor deficit disorder. Isolating in nature allows us to reconnect and feel how soothing the natural world is. There's actually a lot of science behind this too that I don't want to try to link to all of those, but you can Google that. Go to scholar.google.com to find the actual scientific reports. Spirituality is often practiced in isolation. Personally, I believe in the God of the Bible, and solitude is a good time to commune with the Creator. It also is a good time to exercise our creativity. Most sparks of creative genius happen when you aren't distracted by something else. Being alone can lead to profundity. It's true, but really I just wanted to say profundity because it's fun to say out loud. For now, you've had a peek into the world where everything left is right. And if it feels right, then it must be left. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, please like, comment, subscribe. You can join the Facebook community. Ask any questions you have over there. Hit the anonymous member button if you don't want your name displayed. And remember that just because left of normals prefer to be alone doesn't mean we don't want to be invited to events. And of course, share this podcast with your friends, whether they are left, normies, or right.